You can't say that. Traitor. Traitor.
She's still sleepy.
Are you not well, honorable member?
When are you paying the money?
Hey, hey.
Hong, Hong.
You are not allowed to be emotional.
Take your seat.
Draw the lela pili.
Nkandla. That's unparliamentary.
Hey.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Sunday Times Politics Weekly. I'm Konita Hunter. Joining me today are my inimitable colleagues at the Sunday Times Politics Desk, Zima Semtiwana, Apiwe de Klerk, and Zingisa Mvumvu. Now, the land question and the debate around expropriating land without compensation has taken on many forms, right? This week's discussion is prompted by a leaked newsletter from former President Thabo Mbeki titled, "What Then About the Land Expropriation Without Compensation?" The 30-page document is in true Mbeki style a history lesson, starting at the founding mission of the ANC in 1912, moving along history to the ANC's Morogoro Conference, and then to the party's 2017 Nasrec Conference, where it resolved to expropriate land without compensation. Now, Zingisa, you've read Mbeki's document where he basically rehashes history in a certain way, but mostly he's framing an argument in that 30 pages. What is Mbeki trying to articulate?
Well, thanks, Kate. No, I think he's trying to articulate his point of view on the matter, which is not the point of view of the ANC as we know it, which in Nazareth adopted land expropriation without compensation as its policy. And it is also important to note that in that same conference where the ANC adopted land expropriation without compensation as its policy, the former president, Thabo Mbeki, was not in attendance of that conference. And therefore, now comes via the back door obviously anyone can contribute to this particular debate, but I think he would have had a much better understanding if he had been part of that conference and raised these issues there. Perhaps even that policy wouldn't have been adopted to what it is now. But in essence, he's saying this is not in line with the fundamental values of the ANC, that South Africa belongs to all who live in it. But even there, he's very selective, because although the ANC has always spoken about non-racialism and South Africa belonging to all who live in it, black and white, it has also spoken about the need to correct the injustices of the past. He doesn't touch that at all. So that's where the selectiveness comes from, because he wants to put across his point of view on the land expropriation without compensation. What is very clear is that he doesn't agree with the ANC policy as adopted in Nasrec, but he didn't attend the conference.
So we'll move back to that point, but I just wanted to quote what Mbeki wrote, and he says, "It was with this regard to this context the statements made by the leadership of the ANC after the December 2017 54th National Conference that land would be expropriated from one national group without compensation and handed to another national group came across as representing a radical departure from policies faithfully sustained by the ANC during 105 years of its existence." So basically Mbeki saying that expropriation of land without compensation cannot exist within the ambit of ANC ideology, where it's a non-racial world ANC doesn't see color, and he really pokes at this sort of recent phenomenon, as he claims it, that ANC is a black party, and he says that's never been the case. But my question to you is, how much of this, whether he was at the conference or not at the conference, how much of this conversation, because I mean this is just adding to a debate that's already been raging for the past year or so, how much of this actually changes the way the discourse happens or affects the ANC's internal deliberations around land?
Well, an ANC cadre, Paulo Jordan, yesterday also weighed in on the letter. He did say that it would have been better if the former president had raised these issues within the parameters of the ANC rather than writing a public document and appearing as a critic. Remember, the ANC is very much of an internal looking party. They don't like to be scrutinized by their own outside the ANC structures, which I think makes sense if he had participated from the inside, because now what it does for him as an ANC cadre criticizing the ANC from the outside. He just paralyzes the entire thing, and he makes the ANC look like they don't know what they're doing. They were confused by adopting this policy because some within the ANC who are very much respected are saying, actually, because in essence he was saying that the resolution itself is nonsensical.
But we have to take into consideration the fighting that happened, or rather the disputes, the vehement disputes and divide that this particular issue caused in the party for the last 5 years. And, I mean, you can't discount what happened moments up to when this resolution was passed at the 2017 NASREC conference, that people were deeply divided over this issue of expropriation of land without compensation. So I mean, that cannot be discounted. But also, I think that argument is a bit flawed that, you know, Mbeki should have raised this inside the party because it affects society. It's long past the party.
Yeah. But look, I mean, the thing is that Mbeki is an ANC member and an ANC leader who's got the rights as an ex officio member of the ANC, let alone that he doesn't attend it. He's not interested for whatever reason. And democratic centralism has always been how the ANC operates, whereby if a decision is taken by the majority, the land expropriation without compensation was a majority decision. You correctly put it, there's a lot of divide within that debate itself. But the majority of branches in NASREC emerged as a winner to say this is the policy we're adopting. But you are right again, now it's a societal issue. But he, when he comments, how do we view him? We are saying an ANC leader, a former ANC leader, Thabo Mbeki, is saying so and so. And he knows the kind of impact that what he says makes, and it makes it, and he is viewed as a former, he's not just a random citizen like anyone, like any other man on the street. What he says is viewed to be the views of some within the ANC who are higher up in terms of the hierarchy of leadership.
So the fundamental question is, does South Africa belong to all who lives in it? That doctrine and that ideology, is it contradictory to expropriation of land without compensation, Apue?
Look, I agree with Vumvu on the fact that maybe he should have raised this leading up to the NASREC conference. During that conference, we could have been able to then understand his critics, the points that he is unhappy with. I agree with him about the shift to say the ANC is a black party.
You agree with Mbeki when Mbeki says that it's wrong?
Yes, I agree with him. There seems to be a smaller, if you could say, grouping, especially those who have associated with the former president, who seem to think that the ANC is a black party. I think had it been discussed at an ANC platform or conference, everyone would have emerged agreeing on what does it mean when we say South Africa belongs to all who live in it. And with that, the redress that needs to happen, how is it done such that those who would have benefited before feel that they are not being chased away, they are not being isolated, they are part of the debate, they are included in the decisions. So that's what I feel uneasy about with former President Thabo Mbeki. I mean, he's been silent on on a number of issues, and it comes to a point, okay, maybe it's not too late, Parliament has not finalized how they are going to change Section 25 to give life to this, but you know, it's important maybe, but it's a bit late, I think.
So a question really about timing, but, you know, just to wrap up this discussion, you know, the ANC doctrine and ANC ideology is often looked at in different views. And a lot of people accuse Mbeki sometimes of sort of having this kind of, you know, this warped way of looking at the history of the ANC, because other people will come out and argue that land has been the central feature of the existence of the ANC. And how then do you deal with redress and you deal with the challenges of the past without going to the core, the center of it all, which is why the party was started in 1912. But I mean, those are ideological you know, debates which will continue, I think.
Can I just, you know, participate on the question that you asked the clerk about whether the two can coexist? I think the two can coexist, you know, and I draw that from the preamble of our constitution.
South Africa's constitution.
Which does say, it's a long one, I can't read it now, but you know, it speaks about how we recognize the injustices of the past, and then it ends by saying South Africa belongs to all who live in it, united in diversity. Right there, it does acknowledge that there were injustices that were committed and they should be addressed, and we all agreed to that. That's why it's a preamble for everyone. So I don't understand the view that when you pursue land expropriation without compensation, you are excluding the other side. No, because it's everyone is participating. We all agreed that, okay, some of us benefited, and part of the beneficiation was the land that was dispossessed from the indigenous people to these. Now we are saying, let's share. And I doubt the ANC wants a situation whereby they are just taking land from everyone. And they've been emphasizing on this to say, we are not grabbing land and saying, okay, go to wherever. We are saying, among the land that we have, how do we share equally among each other? And I mean, they are saying now, all those who work it well, which is another ANC they keep on changing, you know. But I doubt anyone. I mean, even if you go to the EFF talks about nationalizing the land, but and then it says it will distribute to everyone. So I don't foresee a situation whereby the previous benefactors of a land dispossession, which happens to be white people, are going to be chased away and find themselves landless. Yeah. It's not going to happen. I doubt any of these parties that are pursuing land expropriation without compensation are going that route. And that is what former president wants us to believe, that we are getting to where others are going to be disadvantaged. I don't see anyone being disadvantaged here. I see a fair and equitable process whereby everyone is going to get to a level of happiness, because now we have a huge chunk of the majority completely unhappy. You have a small minority extremely happy. Why don't we balance the scale and get everyone relatively average happy, you know?
Can I just jump in very quickly, and then your issue about timing is important. I'm thinking about it now, because the way Ramaphosa has sold this redress and this expropriation to the world is that he kind of moved past the premise of what Mbeki is trying to poke holes in, to say we have to do it regardless of how your views are. This country has been too divided, and people have been marginalized so much that It's now a post expropriation decision. It's now, how do you effect that? And I think what he has been telling the international community now this week at the UN General Assembly in New York, and what he said during his stimulus package announcement, really points to what you're saying, in that maybe now is not the time to discussing whether there should be this phenomenon. It's already going to happen. It's a matter of how. You were saying, Sebastian.
I was saying that if the historic mission of the ANC is to unite all people, black and white, then the concept of non-racialism, if it is to work, the racial economic imbalances must be radically rectified. And that's what I believe expropriation of land without compensation aims to do. I don't see where the problem lies.
So basically, expropriation helps that phenomenon of the South Africa belongs to all
who live in it. It makes it come true.
Yeah.
Because right now it feels like South Africa belongs to the few that own land.
Because land is everything. Land is the economy. Land is, I mean, I think there's no debate there about the importance of land. Even he, former President Mbeki, can't dispute the importance of land. That for one to have pride, they must have land, as to how they use it. But you see, it's also the perpetuation of saying, he said it before, that you cannot give land to people who don't know how to use it. Also, it reduces land to agricultural purposes, which is not the case. There's a lot of things. Minerals are located under what? Land.
The Sunday Times reported on Sunday that the DA is investigating how Maimane's intention to stand as a Western Cape Premier candidate was leaked to the media. At least three party leaders have been contacted by the chair of the DA's Federal Legal Commission, Dennis Breitenbach. She has allegedly asked for the electronic devices, including cell phones and laptops. Apiwe de Klerk, you've been covering the DA. You also happen to be wearing a blue shirt today. Is that coincidental? But on a serious front, I mean, what do you make of this? How can you explain why should people care about this?
Look, people should care about this because the DA historically has been advocating for freedom, freedom of association, freedom of the press, and they've in the past gone out of their way to say we want to protect whistleblowers, we want to protect, you see. So now when the story came true, it was shocking that a DA chair of the FLC would ask leaders to hand over their phones. Their argument, the people who had spoken to us, was that this is an invasion of privacy. And the leader of the DA in the Western Cape had said that to us on the record. It seemed that this has attracted a lot of backlash from some within the party who feel that maybe this is not on. Yes, you can investigate leaks when you say this is sensitive information that has been leaked, because the argument from the party, or rather from those in the party who spoke with us, who are for the investigation, is that it's more so about the leaking of the names of the candidates than the leaking of the fact that Musi Maimane was interested in standing. So you understand that, but the way they go about doing it, it raises a lot of eyebrows. It's a bit scary. I wouldn't want to be subject to be asked to hand over my cell phone even to my editor here. So when you are a politician, you can imagine you have a lot of other things that have got nothing to do with the current issue, but that may compromise you in the long run. So it's yeah.
So Zimase, I mean, the DA has been going through the most for the last bit. Don't you think that, you know, now going on a witch hunt against people who are effectively leaking, I don't think it was, this investigation has to do with that incident alone. I think it's a broader attempt to find out who's leaking stuff about the party. I mean, don't you think that they're sort of shooting themselves in the foot?
They are, Kanita, because if they will do this to their own leaders, to their own members, then who is to say that as official opposition, as government in waiting, as they always say, they are not going to spy on us? You know, so,
or rather this intolerance to people. I mean, the DA is growing as a party. I hear what you're saying, and that inevitably people are going to leak stuff. So now what happens? So are they so intolerant to people leaking information that they must now go and hunt every person that speaks to Apiwe?
They should get used to it now.
You see, generally, you know, this is even broader than this. I mean, as Apiwe was saying, the DA for many years, it has worked so hard to build itself as this party that respects the rule of law, that advocates for all freedoms as enshrined in the Constitution, freedom of speech, freedom of all these kinds of freedoms. And they've done quite well in doing that in the previous years. But as you say, this year they've been going through the most, and they seem to be muddying everything that they've worked so hard to build in the previous years. I mean, you can't say... they were given the opportunity to respond to the thing, which is how we treat everyone. When there's a leak, you respond, you dismiss it if there isn't. And there was, and they responded to it. So I don't understand the obsession now to clamp down in the future. You're sort of instilling fear that in the future, if you speak to Apiwe, then you know we are coming for you. We're going to know because we're going to... And I'm sure people within the DA, even now, will be scared to speak to Apiwe again in the future because they may think that we are even being spied on as we do it. You know, interception, of course, and stuff like that. And I don't think that is how we should function in a democratic country that the DA so espouses and has been making noise about for all these previous years. So it's a serious contradiction of what they claim to be of what they've been in the previous years. But this year, they're completely missing the plot. And this is just one of the cases. I mean, they lost the case in Nelson Mandela last week, which was a no-go case in the first place. So they seem to not know what to do, and they are panicking, and the elections are coming. They don't know what to do. It's a whole messy situation. But hey, Apiwe maybe is going to give us some other fresh stuff.
What are you bringing this week?
You see, the funny part about the story is that the story about an investigation of a leak has been leaked to us. You know? So, I mean, maybe it says there's still hope for us as the media. Look, it doesn't really sit well with look, leading up to this, there's been a couple of our sources who have been preferring that we rather speak using other what you call apps. And prior to this story, I have been finding them as being paranoid, and I never thought maybe. And now after this, I'm starting to take them more than serious. And it's
what we saw
disturbing
in the height of the Zuma, you know, popularity in the ANC. People were afraid to talk.
Yes.
But for me, what stands out about this story is that it's the second time that the ANC's internal the DA's internal democracy is proven to be a sham. The first one, there was the controversy about a federal leader can decide by himself wherever he wants to be deployed in government, which I mean raises questions about democracy within a party. And the second thing is that people are now, their privacy is being violated. So that two issues of intra-party democracy is a question that we actually need to be taking very seriously.
Yeah, I think they need to have a serious debate about how they deal with their members and the media as they grow, because increasingly there is a lot of interest in what they discuss in their meetings. Not because we are just saying maybe we need to do what we do to the ANC, to the DA as well. It's because they themselves say we are a government to 16 million people now. It's not the same as it was before 2016, certainly not the same as it was before 2014. I'm thinking it won't be the same as is now after 2019. So this sort of interest is going to grow the more they grow. They need to find a way to be comfortable with the fact that, well, it's leaked. Don't try to go after members, because at the end of the day, it's certain factions within an organization who get to be winners in those situations, and not the actual party, but it's for them to discuss and decide what is good for them going forward. Lest if they don't learn from what is happening with the ANC and how they deal with their own internal fights and leaks, maybe they'll find it difficult.
Yeah, and I think that the DA is no exception to factional politics. Wherever there's a political party, there will be factional. It's often said that, you know, a fish rots from the head and accountability starts from the top, which is why it really surprised me when I read the Sunday Times this week and we saw that National Assembly Speaker Baleka Mbete and her deputy, Lechesa Tsenole, has been named as one of the MPs, one of 42 MPs, who missed the deadline to submit their declarations of financial interests and related benefits. So basically, MPs are required to submit their financial interests. Do they get any gifts? Do they have any businesses? And the leaders of this institution, the leader and her deputy, Baleka Mbete and Lechesa Tsenole, did not do this. What do you think about this?
This is a scandal, Kwaneta. In any other democracy, maybe this would have gotten more attention than it has. Look, in the past, you would find it's ordinary members or maybe an MP here and there and then an investigation would go on to find against them. But when it's the people who are dedicated to deal and enforce this are the ones that are not complying, then you start to wonder, I mean, what are we doing here?
But is there something
to hide?
Do
they take us for a joke? Look, if you see those forms, it doesn't take that long to declare. I mean, you have PAs, you have what is it that is taking so long for them to? You have the whole year or the whole 12-month cycle for you to put together. You know this is required of you. It's not that difficult, really. I mean, if they say there's nothing to hide, why miss that? You know. We are journalists, we don't do those for parliament, but we know when they are required. and we can check. So if you, the person who's supposed to be leading the way, can't do it, what do you expect of the leader of opposition? What do you expect of Julius Malema? And then how do you then expect us to trust you?
So why are these financial interests declarations, why are they important?
Well, of course, Kayla, they are important because we need to know that public representatives, are, especially lawmakers, are in parliament to pursue the mandate of those that elected them, or they get their mandates elsewhere. Because normally, you know, when you want someone to pursue your interest, you sort of sponsor them in one way or the other. And then we in situations like that, we find people starting to sound like they're taking the mandate elsewhere, not from the constituency that elected them. Therefore, it is very important to know that you've got any other influencers outside your constituency, because your constituency is the one that is paying you through your salary. So if you're going to have other financial transactions coming from elsewhere, which may be a way of influencing you, so it's very important that we know about such things. But, I mean, things like this are also a reflection that in South Africa we are more obsessed with compliance and very less about the consequence. I mean, nothing is going to happen to them. Mm-hmm. That's how South Africa has become, and perhaps that is why they are relaxed and they just didn't care, because they know now we're going to make noise about it, but there's not going to be consequences. Greg was saying this is a scandal. In any other country, heads would roll. Something serious would happen with these two individuals who are supposed to be leading by example, but didn't. They know, I comply, don't comply, I'm probably going to be slapped in the face and then told, yeah, please extend the deadline. But seriously, somewhere else, this thing is supposed to get people in serious, serious trouble. But in South Africa, you comply. If you don't, we give you an extension. Nothing happens. Life goes on.
Anything to add?
I think what bothered me more when I read the story is that it looks like there was a decision to hide those 42 MPs to spare them of embarrassment, because you have Ubaleka as a Speaker of Parliament and you have Utsenoli. And I, you know, you look at Parliament, South Africa, the law, our constitution, and you expect transparency. And the fact that there was an effort to hide the people who
to not reveal
the transgressors bothers me more.
Yeah, because almost as if there's like a deliberate attempt to say we didn't comply, but we're not gonna let people know that we didn't comply.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is very worrying, actually. Mm-hmm. Any final thoughts?
But the problem with our opposition parties is that there are some there among the 40 who may have not complied. So I think they should be raising this issue strongly in Parliament. I think our non-governmental organizations should be advocating that there must be tougher action, not just in this instance, but in other instances, because we really, really need to know what these people get up to the whole year. Who gives them a goat here and there? Johnny Walker. Yeah. So that we understand, you know, that all is above board. And if I'm given this, I can declare it freely. And, you know,
that's and again, a fish rots from the head. So people mm-hmm. won't comply if the head of the organization
definitely. I mean, and what are we going to say in the future when others don't comply and they say, but what about those ones at the top? I mean, there's nothing you can do about that. Very sad.
Thank you for joining us on Sunday Times Political Weekly. Stay in touch with the conversation on Twitter. And until next week.